Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the illustrious Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, where it happens here every Saturday night, whether you like it or not, right here on your radio, internet radio dial, including iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or wherever podcasts are found. Every Saturday, we watch a movie chosen round robin by one of the group, and then we watch it, dissect it, and talk about it for your listening enjoyment and edification. I'm Colin. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars.
Sean.
Chris.
Including in there.
Jenny. Oh.
Gary.
And tonight, it's all my fault, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. We watched Star Crash from the year 1978, directed by, depending on who you listen to, either a fellow named Louis Coates or an Italian fellow named of Luigi Cozzi. Cozzi? Cozy. C-O-Z-Z-I.
I don't know.
Cozy?
I was in Cozy.
I like how you're accountable for your mistakes, though.
I like how you identified right off the bat that there are people that might listen to this and not enjoy it and just keep coming back and, like, hate listening to it.
I don't know who those people are. What the hell? There are good bad movies and bad good movies, and this is one of the best bad movies ever made. You can watch a bad movie that just bores the living hell out of you all the way through. Then there's other bad movies where, like, Sharknado. I'm going to throw that out there. Sharknado, where it intentionally tries to be bad. Then you've got adorable movies like Star Crash, where
Time adorable, maybe?
Well, I was going to say, are we in agreement, but maybe not, that they were trying to make a good movie.
Oh, I'll give them that.
Yes.
They tried.
Tried.
And they failed.
I don't know.
The way down the rungs of the ladder.
Yeah, they tumbled. They hit every single one.
We talked about this movie on the Freak Show because, some of us, I think Sean and I
think you and me are the only ones have actually seen it before. One drunken night back in the day.
After a Freak Show.
Yeah.
Dinner, Freak Show, podcast.
Drinking.
Then we watched.
Lots of drinking.
Nothing good ever comes from that. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m.
And I said,
including Star Crash.
This has got to be one of the craziest fucking movies
I've ever seen. How'd you even hear about this movie?
I heard about it because I had a... Well, I've always heard the name but and seen the cover of it, but never, you know, had the inkling to pick it up. But I saw a trailer of it on a Grindhouse trailer reel. Mm-hmm. And of all the trailers that were on that disc, I remember sitting there going, like, that looks like the most insane, crazy, whacked out, you know, borderline, you know, just retarded movie. It's like, I have to see this thing.
That sums it up in one word.
I think it would have to lose IQ points to become retarded.
Well, I have, like, a crazy crush on Caroline Monroe.
Well, okay, I'll give you that.
Like this slave girl outfit.
Well, she was the best double feature in the movie.
So.
But yeah, no, it was. It's Vampirella's outfit. It was kind of everything. We won't even start with the Star Wars ripoffs, but yeah, it was kind of a mix between Leia's slave costume and Vampirella from the comics costume with the upturned collar.
Right. And barely anything else.
Right. But back then, that was in that time frame, that's when the Harris comics were out with Vampirella. So that was, you know, popular in the. In the fantasy genre back then.
Well, I was trying to figure out, like, what kind of influence Barbarella might have had on this movie. Because Barbarella
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking all Barbarella the whole way when it came to her, the outfit choices and what they put her through
sci-fi
with
sci-fi stuff.
With the
and Eerie had their sci-fi stuff. You had the EC Comics stuff, all that, you know. And a lot of those guys went on to do, you know, sci-fi comics after they shut down a lot of the hardcore horror comics. They went and did Weird Science and all those kind of comics, so... And I think that's where you got a lot of that influence. All those guys grew up reading all that stuff.
They put a lot of women in bikinis in those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's how they sold them to adolescent kids or boys. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've been a fan of Caroline Monroe since I saw her in Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter, which if you haven't seen that movie.
Goddamn classic.
You got to check it out. It's awesome.
Wonderful.
A Hammer film. But she was also in Dracula AD 1972. She was in The Land That Time Forgot. She was a Bond girl. And I want to say The Spy Who Loved Me.
Was she the one the spy loved?
I don't think so.
She was the bad girl.
I don't think so.
Of course she was, Colin.
She was the femme fatale. Oh, yeah.
What was her name? She had to have some cheesy name. She was a Bond girl.
I don't know.
Like, right. I don't remember.
Something ridiculous.
I mean, nothing ever on a top pussy galore.
Yeah. But, yeah. 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 On the top or something.
What
like
does? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So she's in it. She's Stella Starr, which I think one of the alternate titles for this movie is The Adventures of Stella Starr. But one of the producers said, there's this movie out called Star Wars. So I want you to make a movie called Star Crash. People will love it. The kids will go. Science fiction's a big thing right now.
Can I interject one small thing? Because you just brought that to my attention. What was the alternate title for it?
The Adventures of Stella Starr.
That's the one with the sex scenes in it. This thing was a porn movie where they just put in all the straight scenes, cut out the sex scenes, and put this out. That's what it is. But go ahead.
They spent a lot of money on special effects if this is a skin flick. Yeah.
Well, I think that was just a joke.
I actually kind of feel that way, except the acting is better in a porn
movie. No, you all the way feel that way.
It's true. Some of the lines, definitely.
I have had to have been tongue-in-cheek. You want to take this seriously. You want to think this was an attempt to make a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping this was an attempt at a really bad practical joke on some producers they didn't like. Because some of the lines are just so awfully funny in a horrible way.
Artak?
Zarth Arn?
The guy with the permed hair and the...
Oh, Akon.
Oh, that was the time.
Artak or
Akon?
Akon.
Fast Acton.
Yeah, I made the Tenactin joke.
You mentioned the porn parody with him talking like the way he does? That's my penis. Would you like to touch it?
Yeah, he does. He comes across with that joyful porn attitude from that era. It's like if you watch the old 70s porn movies, that they had that crazy acting like he's doing.
Well,
he's not acting. Well, he's staring at the camera.
I'm curious if we have actually, because I've seen this movie twice now, and I'm still not entirely sure what his story is. So Acton is Stella's, like...
He's a navigator.
She's the pilot.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be rogues out in space.
They're almost like the Han and Chewie.
Right.
Yeah. Basically.
But we find out
she's Chewie because
We find out halfway through the movie that somehow Acton has superpowers.
He can see the future,
and he can bring people back to life.
He has a light switch because it's not big enough to be a saber.
Yeah, he can bring back people back to life. He can.
But he won't do it. He won't tell anyone the future because that's breaking the law.
That's all the future.
Like you pointed out, though, intergalactic piracy not so much.
Yeah, but I can break that. I can get 237 years for intergalactic piracy, but I can't break the law by predicting the future, like, oh, I might get caught for committing the crime of intergalactic piracy.
The entire movie. That explains it. That explains the look on his face because he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah,
we'll be fine. Fuck it.
Well, at one point,
they'll be in prison long.
Stella and her other companion, who we'll get to, get frozen and they bring her aboard the ship, and it's like, okay, you got to use your power, Acton, to
a power that nobody knew about up until about 30 seconds before this.
Right. And then we better mention that before we do that.
It's like a heat ray or something that he like blasts out of his hand.
He Mr. Miyagi-er.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So he can shoot. So is he an alien or a robot? Because he gets at the point where we find out that he has superpowers. He gets clocked on the back of his head by a crew member who...
It's his shoulder.
The sudden but inevitable betrayal.
By Thor, yes.
By Yogurt, I should say.
Yeah.
By Mel Brooks making an early appearance as Yogurt.
He always played a biker in the 70s. Like in the old 70s movies, like a lot of Clint Eastwood stuff. He was always, I think he was in Every Which Way But Loose. He played a biker in there, too. The guy that played Thor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who was that guy? He's probably on this thing somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Robert Tessier, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, play an extra.
Thor. Does it say Thor?
It doesn't say.
Oh, okay. We should have watched the credits.
Yeah. Well, okay. Before we get away from acting, though, I want to point out Marjo Gortner, because like when I told somebody about Marjo Gortner, they're like, oh, my wife was like totally in love with him in the 70s. I'm like, who the fuck was this guy?
Yeah.
I've seen him in a movie. It was called The Food of the Gods.
About the giant.
If you guys haven't seen the film, he looks like a male figure skater. That's what he is. I mean, that's. We almost had beer come out the nose.
With an awesome 70s perm.
Oh, awesome. That hair.
God, he definitely has the Brady hair.
He has a perfectly coiffed afro, though.
Yeah, you got to have
that. That's the Brady hair.
I imagine,
the Brady hair.
I imagine the whole set just smelled like Aussie hairspray.
Yeah.
It's definitely the greatest American hero kind of thing going.
Yeah. Well, Marjo Gortner.
Smell like Aquanet.
Like his, he was actually like, he was the son of I can't remember if he was an evangelist or televangelist.
Televangelist also.
And they
the Josh Dugar of his time?
I think so. Something like that. And they brought this kid up, and at like 10 years old, Marjo Gortner was able, like, he was giving sermons. Like, he was one of these kids who could just, like, you know,
quote the
verses. Bible, learn stuff, and he was charismatic, and he was out, like, giving, you know, they bring people in to hear sermons from the miracle kid, you know, who was in touch with God, and he'd do, like, whole spiel. And so he became like a thing as like a tent preacher.
Then he got away from that and became an actor, and maybe God told him his career was going to.
That's probably why he plays sort of this monkish with super monk with superpowers, which I don't know where they got that idea from. I have no idea. A light sword of some sort.
Yeah, but it was weird because sometimes they homogenized some of the characters, because there were points that one character would seem almost like Han or Chewie, and then there were points where they'd seem like Obi-Wan, and it just different.
Yeah, they borrowed roles from. Yeah. They borrowed from everywhere.
Well, I did listen to the commentary on this movie at one point, and the director said that he did not see Star Wars because it wasn't out in Italy at the time. He bought the novelization, so that was all he knew of Star Wars. But when you're watching this movie, there's no way in hell the person who made this movie did not see Star Wars.
No.
Because they rip off the first shot is a ship flying over the top of the camera. There's the trench run on the Death Star is basically recreated here in extremely low budget.
And Ellis C-3PO minus a couple of letters and numbers.
You could get that out of the book, right? I mean, if that's his argument.
The
visual look.
There are some.
I mean, C-3PO was from England.
He's a little
Ellis
lost in
South Carolina.
I don't believe the director when he says that, but there is a strong precedence of having the ships come in early, and either the Saturday morning matinees with the
that had a lot of Flash Gordon-esque.
So there may have been other influences on this guy other than Star Wars, but I have a hard time believing he didn't see Star Wars before this. I just don't believe that.
There's a couple of video game influences in there too.
Sure.
After the fact, you're saying video games that were influenced by.
Might have been.
When did Star...
Centipede was 80, 81.
Space Invaders, maybe?
Oh, was this 78?
I think Space Invaders was right on that same year. Yeah, and sometimes the zeitgeist of a filmmaker collides at the same time with what some other people are coming out with. I mean, you look at some of the things that Tarantino did at the same time Wong Kar-wai did them. It's hard to believe that they came out in the same year. You would have to think that one influenced the other. But it just happens sometimes. But I don't think this is one of those cases. I think he is definitely influenced by Star Wars.
It's time.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I think.
It does have, it's like, it seems like there's enough stuff where we can draw comparisons to, like, Star Wars. But, you know, it just in its story and the characters. But in some ways, I'm like, okay, well, if you're doing science fiction, those types might be, you know, types in a science fiction story. Yeah. Because it seems to also borrow heavily from, like, sword and sorcery, almost.
Buck Rogers, episodic.
Yeah. Well, see, we've talked about this just in comics in general, because there's really become a point where the comics, a lot of the stories, it's the same stuff throughout every company. But see, these guys all grew up reading the same comics, watching the same old TV shows, that they all got influenced by a lot of the same things in their pop culture. You know, so now it all transfers through. So maybe it is just, you know, that's what they were growing up watching, you know, reading. I don't know if heavy metal was out back then in Italy.
Yeah, it was.
Was it in 70?
Well, I don't know if it was in Italy. I mean, I know the magazine.
But I'm saying they had their own cartoons and their own, you know, science fiction comics. So I'm sure, you know, they grew up reading kind of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you run into it. So then you do start getting the same ideas over and over, just a little tweak here and there. But I don't believe they didn't see Star Wars.
Yeah, right. Well, Stella is captured early on and taken to a slave planet where she's put into this awesome...
eight times, I think, in the movie.
Yeah. At least.
And she's recruited her... She and Acton are recruited by the Emperor of the what?
I have no idea.
The first circle of the universe.
The first circle of the universe.
Played by...
Christopher Plummer!
Chang.
Who must have been there on set, I'm guessing, for like
a day.
Right? He must have been able to knock all this shit off.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's in like his throne room.
I was surprised because he looked so much like Captain Von Trapp. I wanted to see what the year, like the difference was between this and The Sound of Music.
Well, it's at least 10 years, right?
Yeah, it's 13 years.
13 years?
I was actually kind of impressed by that. He held his own for 13 years.
He's still the Silver Fox in Star Trek.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he can deliver a line. He can deliver a line.
I was wrapped at that last.
As ridiculous as it is.
I was freaked out by that because now I'm going to have nightmares. I'm going to be afraid I'm going to wake up and he's going to be there. Do you understand the story now? Let me tuck you in. Because that's how it felt, like he was going to tuck you in at the end of it. It was creepy.
That's only in the 3D
Mr.
version.
Plummer's neighborhood.
Yeah. And then it fades to black.
I remember the first time we were watching it, we were like, he is like just making shit up. Like they brought him in and it's like, just
he's
say something.
Yeah.
Because he has like the Shatner delivery in this.
Which, that's what I said. Because he kind of, when they did Star Trek together, they talked about their history, you know, about how they're acting together, their Shakespearean acting. And Star Trek, want to go back and re-listen to that commentary when he's talking about that in the interview.
He kind of
mocked Shatner.
Oh.
Yeah. About the way he delivers lines, but it's pretty Shatner-esque in this thing. Yeah.
Yes, very. Very. So
I loved the first appearance of him when he's a hologram and he felt like he had to walk away from the people in the middle of the conversation.
Well,
cracked
Leia
me up.
Didn't stand still. She had to bend over I know she was loading the file into R2-D2, but yeah.
And then she had to turn R2-D2 off to stop loading the file.
But this is for dramatic effect. You're the Emperor of the goddamn universe. You're the only guy who can stop the flow of time.
But it looks like he's about to run into the stairs, and that's why he's turned back around.
And then he stops and turns his head.
Wait a minute. I better turn back around. Yeah.
But see, that's what I'm wondering. Did he just recover that scene there where he's like, oh, crap, the stairs are here? And then he kind of did that dramatic turn like you're talking about. I think that was a mistake, and they just didn't have time to reshoot. Like you said, they had him for one day. They're like, it's good enough. We'll just make it look like he meant to do that.
Oh, that was the question, too, Chris. You were talking about, like, why is everybody dubbed? And they're speaking English.
Obviously these are sets.
Well, in Italy at that period of time, the way that they would shoot, they would do non-sync audio because they knew that their product was international. It was going to be dubbed into whatever language where the movie was going to be shown. So they would shoot with like, the guy would be building the next set like while they were shooting. So you'd be hammering and sawing and shit going on. It's like, just say your lines and we're going to dub it all later.
Okay, I wondered like that too, because the only one I really noticed it with was, what was it, Acton?
Acton,
yeah.
Which there wasn't any in this movie.
His mouth just never seemed to sync up 100%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The girl's was better.
That's not her voice, though. I don't know. That may be Marjo Gortner's voice, but that wasn't Carolyn Monroe.
It fit pretty good with Marjo Gortner.
She's British. Non-British. And
ironically, the people who speak English don't get to have their own voice.
That kind of weirds me out now when we're watching Walking Dead, you know, because, God, what's her name? The character, the girl from Georgia. She's got that Georgia accent, Maggie. And then you meet her at the convention, she's English, and she's, you know, it's just her normal tongue. And it's like, wow, you really pull that off good. I would have never known that had I not met her in person, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it was. But I doubt it.
Well, speaking of dialects, we've got L, the robot. So,
you mean Jerry Reed?
Yeah.
I'm like, L, is that L. Ron Hubbard?
Well, yeah,
named after L. Ron Hubbard?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Is L named after L. Ron Hubbard?
Was he writing back then?
He was in the 40s, 50s when he started, I believe.
Yeah. Before Dianetics.
And
the Scientology has been around since like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I didn't know the way the plot of this movie just meanders. It might go back to that comic book episodic. Like, we have to make sure every eight pages they're in at the end of a new adventure to beginning a new adventure.
Somewhere in the world, because this was cut into an eight-part miniseries.
Yeah, because L, who is the robot guy, starts off as, like, the Terminator who's going to kill Stella and Acton. He's a policeman who's out to bring justice to Galaxy. And then after sentencing these two, they become like best friends.
The giant
crane. After like,
well, once they're sprung from prison.
You're the best companion I've ever had. Yeah.
I've known you for 12 hours, so I will keep you warm from the cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great scene. Yeah, but lie down on your back.
Yeah. Let me keep you warm. I know I'm only a robot.
Trust me. I've done this before.
If we stay together, we might survive the cold.
It was just comical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it was great.
Oh, it was wonderful.
You expect him to go, let's go get him, Sheriff.
I think he did say that at one point. No, I mean, it was close enough.
Close enough, yeah.
This is one of those movies, because it's so poorly done, it's like, they don't let the characters be the characters. They have to explain while they're talking who they are. Like, I am the emotionless robot. Leave me alone, but I'm panicking. Oh, how ironic of me. That's what makes it so awful. One of the many things that makes it so awful.
Well, I do think it looks like they did spend money on it. They did try, at least. I mean, they didn't have a Star Wars budget, but, you know, and they didn't have industrial light. But they tried.
I think you could probably give them both the same budget and you'd still get Star Wars or Star Crash. I think it just depends on who's behind doing what.
I'm just trying to salvage something. I'm space salvaging right now.
Like space truckers.
This did make Ice Pirates look better, though. I like Ice Pirates.
I love Ice Pirates.
Yeah.
At least I loved it when I was 8. I don't know if I would love it now.
Well, the other, for God's sake, coming back to the bar and then bartending. All right, here we go. We've got Barry Weiss, Rolling Rock, and Guinness Blonde.
Brought to you by.
Which I recommend, by the way. It's very good. all right, so Stella is on the ship. I'm just trying to go through the characters here that I can remember. Right. So, we'll get plot, I'm sure, as we
If there is.
I sat there for an hour and a half and didn't get any plot, so don't count on it.
I thought maybe I was the only one, but
we're going to try and figure this out then, because the main antagonist...
We have to solve this tonight before we leave.
...is a character called Count Zarth Arn, which is that's one of the...
No reference to Darth at all.
Yeah, right. To Darth or Count Dracula. I think. Yeah. Is there always a Count?
Right.
Yeah. Because everybody wears capes in this movie.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't
Stella
they?
Stella wears a cape, the Emperor wears
a cape.
It's
cold.
That woman world queen, she wore a cape.
And then she wore like a half
She tried cape. To, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't cover it with a cape. I mean, come on.
Right.
Well, Count Zarth Arn is played by character actor Joe Spinell, who you may remember from movies such as
Maniac,
the original.
And he was in Rocky.
Godfather 1 and 2.
He was in Rocky.
And Rocky.
He was in Taxi Driver also.
Was he in Rocky?
Yeah, he was a cop. He didn't have a crowd big role, but I looked it up.
Was he somebody's manager or a friend of Rocky's?
Was he the lone shark?
They cut to him. During the fights, they cut to him a lot, and he's got the shades on all the time, and he's smiling. He's got the great hair.
That's not the guy that's played the lone shark in the first one, then, is it?
Oh,
no. Rocky work for?
Because
in the second Rocky, that's when he tells him, you don't invest in condominiums, and Rocky goes, I don't use them.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking that might have been him. Mm-hmm. Was that him?
Yeah, he's in Rocky. Yeah, he is.
He makes his smaller appearances in, like, 2, but probably in 1.
Yeah, because that's the only scene I remember in 2 is that of that lone shark. Is that
white guy, Italian-looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably him.
In The Godfather, I remember he runs with, like, Tessio's gang. He's the guy who walks in when the Corleones do the thing at the end where they kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who walks in and shoots Alex Rocco in the face. That's Joe Spinell. And then he's wearing the funeral band because, what is it? Maybe it's not Tessio. Who's the, I'm forgetting my godfather. At the beginning of 2, they show up in Vegas and they've got the black band on because the one actor, like, didn't show up for Godfather Part 2. You guys don't remember this movie all that well. We'll skip it. We'll come back to it. But he's in Godfather.
It's been a long time.
So his motive, Count Zarth Arn, has developed the ultimate weapon.
Mm-hmm. It can destroy planets.
Ultimate weapon with unparalleled power.
It can destroy planets.
Do you remember what it was?
I don't know, but that's no moon.
So somehow hidden within a planet.
I love how Jenny doesn't get these references because she's never seen Star Wars.
I haven't, so maybe I'm going to think Star Wars ripped this movie off.
That's right. That's right. So she'll be like, oh my God, they ripped off Star Wars.
Yeah, you go through life thinking that. Go ahead.
Leia's a lot like Stella Star.
It's a blatant ripoff. Yeah.
She just doesn't kick as much ass as Stella Star. Yeah. That's what you're going to be. You're all going to be all disappointed by Leia.
C-3PO is totally L.
Yeah. What the L?
So the weapon is hidden within a planet. Somehow, the only way that I can describe what it is, it creates these like lava lamp type red monsters. They're called, but they're
we call them bubbles.
We survived.
You talk about budget. It's what the movies used to use when they weren't playing anything at the movies. It was in between. They would put a little hot plate of oil on on the projector because the bulb would be hot and it would melt the wax and kind of just bubble and mix with each other.
To look at.
So it'd be like a screensaver for a projector, although you didn't really need to save a screen for the projector. But that's what it looked like. It was that kind of lava lampy looking stuff. And that was the monster that the super weapon created.
I want to say that there was maybe a Star Trek episode. I mean, my memory is not all that awesome when it comes to the old Star Trek stuff.
The original series?
It seems to me that they flow through some kind of space miasma at some point that like gets into the ship and does. But that's basically what this does. You fly through it and it gets
red
into the ship
come
and
attack.
Fucks you up. And then it's determined, when we actually find like what's inside the planet, this red force field or whatever that can destroy planets is generated by a bank of computers.
Now, just computers, pre-programmed computers.
Amazing.
That can last forever.
They're very excited to discover this. Which I said is that rips off Forbidden Planet. Then I mean that's the they're not really there. It's the computers are down here projecting this stuff
into your minds.
Yeah,
because those weren't real, even though everybody can see them.
Yes,
even though the robots are affected by them, it affects the mind.
Can kill people.
Well,
but,
you can affect
the robot.
Mind.
Also had emotions. He was always nervous.
And he had an oxygen tank. I mean, come on.
Right. Yeah, the robot had an oxygen tank.
He was like a. I was going to say he was like a replicant, but at some point the robot gets like his head knocked off.
No, replicants were interesting.
Circuitry underneath, so he's not.
He gets so nervous. Yeah, he gets so nervous.
Well, that's 3PO. Look at him in the Star Wars movie. He's the one. Oh, R2, we shouldn't do this. Again, playing on the.
Yeah, he's so manic, but he doesn't actually say I'm nervous. Like that's them. That is them ripping us.
He doesn't say I'm supposed to be the emotionless robot.
We'll be melted down to scrap for sure, and things like that. Yeah,
the neurotic robot.
Exactly.
I'm so nervous.
It's the Paul Lynde of robots.
I'm so nervous.
That's there it is. The Jerry Reed robot. So his Zarthon has taken down an Imperial cruiser that has the Emperor's son on it.
Right. And there were three launches that came off the cruiser before it blew up. And they have to find the third launch.
Well, they have to find all three and find out if there are any survivors.
Right. And so they're looking for the third one at one point,
Did I imagine it, or did you
I don't remember
those
launches
were going... Did you see the wire holding them up off to the side?
I did see on occasion wire work.
The wires.
Yeah, there was a couple of good wire shots.
Well, what I was wondering? Like, when I'm watching this, I'm like... I mean, I know how the Star Wars effects were done because I've seen some stuff. Where basically they would move the camera.
Yes.
Right? So the model was stationary, the Falcon or whatever... And they'd move the camera
around it. Yeah.
But on this, I think they're moving the ship. The ships are on like some kind of track that you can't see.
Right.
That's blue screened out.
Okay. Well, can't see is optional, but well, not always.
You can see it riding it though. Like when it hits like the joint in the tracks, it goes. As it's going around.
Especially one, it felt like they just scrubbed out the track on it that it had been riding around. Yeah, I saw that a couple times.
But space is very colorful because it's an Italian movie.
That's really colorful stars.
And you could tell they only had three main models to work with on that big scene where they're launching the final attack. It's the same three ships, just different angles. And
There's a lot of that.
I mean, you can see, because as you're looking on the one ship, you can see what it is if you really look at it. They take, you know, when you're taking a model apart and it's all on the framework and you're just cutting the pieces off?
Yeah.
All that T framework you got left, they just stack
it on. I used to make models out of this shit and they're just taking the leftover parts and sticking them to the sides.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah,
they bought hundreds of models, took those squares and parts and stuck them to the ship.
Yep.
That's exactly what it was.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It was comical.
With the goddamn Italians.
It was wonderful.
With Legos.
Yep.
There were Legos.
And,
I guess
only the shittiest engineers survived in the future because those ships are
horrible. Not aerodynamic
at all. Not at all.
The catfish ship, the USS Catfish, as we dubbed it, is about the most dynamic ship on there. The rest of the little centipede ships aren't too bad either.
Yeah,
they look almost like the ships from War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
A little bit,
But those are the ones that they completely lost count of.
Yeah,
there's one left. They blow that up. Yeah. There's six minus one is five.
I'm going to tell you what, I never want to be in combat with those people because I like to know how many targets we got left, and they had no clue.
Oh, it's fucking awesome. Yeah, because you're like, did they just edit the sequence out of order?
I don't know.
What is happening? Because, at one point they show, like, five ships. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we've got one left. And we're like, what, didn't we just see five?
Right.
And they shoot one, and they're like, all right, there's three more coming in from our starboard. And you're like, what the hell?
They actually do the math for you. They say there's one ship left. They blow it up. And then she says, 6 minus 1 = 5. She actually says that as a line.
Well, that's like, as I was watching that scene, in my head I'm hearing, Maverick, we got a problem here. I'm showing two pair, not one pair. It's
like... Oh, the spatial geography is for shit, and then she can't tell like who's flying it, who or
right.
Or
just where. Shoot it close so nobody can tell that it's all fake.
They've got a lot of, the laser blaster. I guess 70s laser blast. It makes you appreciate the work that was done in Star Wars a little bit more when you see it done badly like this.
Well, and then when you got the big scenes, like I was saying in the movie, you got things that look like gun ports. They're not firing. It's the little light where it looks like somebody rips a door open and shoots the gun out the door, which apparently is cool because Stella jumped out an open window and didn't get sucked out into space.
She jackknife out that window.
Yeah, that was
the best part is the torpedoes that they sent off. Not only did they just break through glass on the side of the ship and
there's
just
no
land
explosive
in there,
decompression,
but there is no decompression. Nobody's getting sucked out of the windows. They open up and they're just people inside.
Yeah,
they're not like missiles.
Super weapon people. What I did say,
super weapon. They don't explode.
The Japanese actually
just people
in World
inside.
War II did have the, I forget what they call them, the typhoon or tsunami torpedoes, which were actually human driven torpedoes. That way the pilot could direct them into a ship.
Were they? And then
they exploded. It was kamikazes underwater.
Oh, okay,
basically.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So that's
which would be a lot more horrible, but a lot more useful than having two guys with guns come out.
Just pump a couple of warheads in there. Yeah, two guys
of your little torpedo. Fire the torpedo. Land. Then they come out and get shot.
Well, and like you said, and then what was the evil guy's name? He was
Count Zartharn.
Yeah. Okay. His guys are getting their asses kicked. It's like, oh wait, we've got the Death Squad. Bring them out.
It's on here somewhere.
That's been plan number one.
Our special group of five soldiers.
That are actually good at their jobs, and they did a lot of good.
I do believe
for
those
him.
Men never saw stormtroopers because their soldiers all hit their targets. But
that is true.
Well, because they had a guy standing up there giving orders, kill them over there.
Yeah. They're all like, oh shit, is that what we're supposed to be doing? Oh fuck.
Joe Spinell has a moment where I just thought it was the greatest thing because he's all wide eyed and like crazy.
He does
tell somebody something like, and I'm going to leave you here to die. This is the greatest thing ever.
I'm
going to give you 1 hour to get out of this crap.
The villain has to explain what he's going to do and then walk away.
Oh, yeah.
And just leave everybody loose. Not tie them up.
I can kill you now.
Not restrain them.
I can kill all three of you, David Hasselhoff and your two friends.
Oh, we haven't even talked about that.
We haven't even talked about that.
Sorry. Oh, spoiler. But I'm not going to. I'm going to give you 1 hour to figure this out.
Right.
And I'm going to laugh as I leave.
I've been waiting for a lull to do an intro because that's what he deserves.
Well, let's toss the mic.
What he deserves for doing this move.
Over to
wait, pause and rewind. Right?
Everybody's got to start somewhere. Man.
Who else is this
true
movie?
True enough.
The hidden gem.
Let's freeze time.
It had to be the earliest thing he's done. We're gonna need
IMDb because this is before Knight Rider.
His hair says this is the first right. thing he's done.
Yeah,
but
and his makeup because he's wearing lots of makeup.
He's got guy
liner. So much eyeliner.
Just a hint of it.
Yeah, the only person that was pulling that makeup off back then was Kiss and Alice Cooper. They were the only people pulling that makeup off.
Tell us about the character, Jenny. Tell us about.
I don't want to.
I stole your thunder.
Tell us about Simon. Simon, the Emperor's son.
Simon's a very self-absorbed, just stands there and delivers lines. I really don't even know what he's saying. I'm so captivated by his good looks.
Neither do the robots, because he's making kissy faces at him when he's sword fighting. Yeah, he's duck-lipping him.
A little bit.
I'm so captivated by his stare.
This is his first thing. What do we got in Hasselhoff?
Well, he was in a couple TV shows and then a movie called Revenge of the Cheerleaders. That's your soft core movie. And followed by Star Crash.
Yep.
And The Love Boat, The Cartier Affair, and Knight Rider 82. So this is 78, yeah.
This is how we got
Prince
Knight Rider.
Simon.
This is how we got mainstream.
Prince Simon, yes. He is Christopher Plummer's son.
Dun, dun, dun. But he's introduced wearing this fucking crazy mask, like, because you're not supposed to know who he is. He crashed on the planet, and he's got this, like,
it's like they knew in 40 years on it. This is going to be a great reveal.
Yeah.
We're going to put a helmet on him.
Yeah, right? This is like our star, right?
Well,
like,
right. He's top billed.
It almost is like the mask Burgess Meredith is wearing. Yeah, Marjorie
Gordner was before him, but it might be like
when he first comes out. And also the son, Arthur's son in Excalibur. Little, kind of a mix of those two masks.
Yeah, I'm sure
together.
they're kind of going off those myths a little bit. Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, but, you're right, third.
But yeah.
Third bill. Oh, sorry, Hasselhoff.
I don't know what to make of that.
First male, though.
First what?
Male.
Marjo Gardner.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I know.
He's not acting.
Yeah.
He's not acting. He's listed second there.
Yeah.
Acton is the man.
I think Acton deserved to be billed above Hasselhoff in this movie.
Yeah.
Well especially for his dying scene. But we'll get to that later.
His acting is so over the top at points, though.
Because we have the Amazons, we've got the troglodytes.
Right, they get to a planet,
we've got the giant
giant robot with inverted boob nipples.
Yes.
As opposed to the other nipples. That was a prototype fembot. But
Gary totally thought they were going to be cannons, and I thought he was right.
Well, when the ship shows up above it, and the thing, I'm like,
right,
who's
she's
shooting
gonna
at who?
Yeah, because they are shooting right at the boobs.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's the ship shooting at the statue, not the other way around.
Maybe she's just relishing it, has to get into it
before the cannons come out.
Right, she's got to get excited by battle. There you go. If she was on the frost planet before, this would have been a lot easier. Then it would have been easier to shoot people. I understand.
Well, I just like how this robot's there, and what's her face? Stella, she starts like to run away, and she takes two steps and falls dramatically into
the... And then she's like, no!
And then shows the robot trying to grab her.
And she rolls like 20 feet, because that's easier than getting back up and running some more.
And that
I was
that
like,
robot,
I run in the sand better when I'm shit-faced.
It's how the crane game was born, because it has about the same grabbing power. Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. And then that giant sword, it's like... And I don't remember the character. I'm not a big Nightmare Before Christmas. I've seen it, but I can't quote characters. But the kind of evil doctor, the Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, that Sally.
Those robots
Sally.
Had his face, almost.
Oh, okay, with the duck bill kind of thing.
I can't remember what his name is either. I'm ashamed.
Now, I'm sure if that was anything, it was Burton has seen Star Crash. He's like, oh, that'd look cool.
I don't know either. I can't remember.
Well, those
but I knew
things
what,
are
I knew
like,
what you're talking about.
It's a... You know, this giant statue robot, whatever the hell we're saying, is like a stop motion creature, which I'm assuming is there.
Jason the Argonauts throwback.
Not Harryhausen did it.
Yeah, right.
Because it would have been better. It would have been better.
It was here's
a Metropolis robot come to life.
Yeah. And there's also a couple of duck-faced robots. They have swords.
That are almost like the skeletons in Jason the Argonauts.
Yeah.
That Acton has to fight with. The aid of his
sword that is a beam of light. I don't know what you might call that.
I don't know where that would have come from as far as the inspiration for that.
I have no idea.
It looked like it had a base, didn't it?
Yeah,
it did.
Oh yeah, it did.
Like a hilt and everything.
Because he had it behind his back when Zartharn was
more like a sword.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's some saber of light. I don't know.
That changes colors just randomly.
Yeah, yeah,
blue started and green. Out blue, went
blue
to
and
green.
But we haven't seen Star Wars. Our good guy's using blue and green, but we haven't seen Star Wars. Because you notice
you could infer that from the book, though. I that would want to be one of the easiest things to transfer over from the book.
Was that
I
in the book?
What it
I've
looked
never
like?
Read the novel.
Right. You have to see that. That's a visual.
I don't know.
Right?
I'm pretty sure you could describe that.
He might have saw that in the trailer.
I don't know if they would have got that far. Now, later on, the Jedi Academy ones, I can see him saying, because you get the certain stones to use if you're whatever, Sith or Jedi.
Well, just the effect. I mean,
right.
Like,
the way it looks like.
Jenny's checking her watch all of a sudden.
A sword with a laser blade.
Jenny's watch.
All right, so we've covered the major characters, I think, except for Thor, the green-faced...
yogurt.
And if you've ever seen from anything Spaceballs. 70s and they had a biker in it, he's that guy.
Yeah. And he's the guy who's in the spandex.
I've seen him on Kojak, Beretta.
He could be, what's his name? He could be Berryman's younger brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael Berryman?
Yeah, he could be Michael Berryman's younger brother.
Because he's
I think
bald.
He was even in an episode.
He's got that craggy face. And,
no, I think he was even in an episode of The Monkees where he played a biker.
Yeah?
Oh, my God, I just said The Monkees. It's all over.
Well,
I'm almost 50, so what?
Well, he plays Thor, and he's the turncoat, right? He's a policeman with L, the robot. That's stationed with, you know, they're supposed to go on this mission to find these three crash sites. You said you didn't catch that they had to go to the three crash sites?
I did not.
You were talking about the third launch?
I just remember them having to search for the weapon. I don't know, maybe.
I think they have to find Hasselhoff to find the weapon. Because he knows where it is?
No, he doesn't.
Because they, one of the launches, they think he knows where it is.
Was it the Dagobah system?
No, it was like, if you can, you got to
find
the one. Because one of the launches landed on the planet.
Right.
And while you're there, if you can look for the pilot.
Yes.
Yeah. He's my son.
Yes.
Yeah, I want the ship first. I don't give a damn about
right.
My
so
kid.
One of the launches is on the frozen planet.
The ship would destroy the universe.
Before that.
Yeah. So not
Amazon
a lot of.
Right,
on the Amazon planet. So the Amazon planet, the frozen planet, those had the first two
and
launches.
And the troglodyte planet.
Right.
Where Stella
that
gets
was the third one.
Abducted, carried on a steel girder to the troglodyte camp and to be roasted.
And that's where Hasselhoff comes in with his mask. Shoots up the troglodytes. Yeah,
like Obi-Wan chasing off the sand people.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Or what was it, 4,000 BC? 50,000 BC? 4,000 BC? 40,000?
Yeah, something like that. One of those.
Sure, fucking it up. I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Raquel Welch. It's very good.
50,000.
But
it
could be. Something that it's, I forget.
Whatever.
Sure.
It's that
I'm a terrible
basically,
film.
It's the movie poster from Shawshank Redemption, people.
Yes. So they find this thing, and Acton gets taken out of action in an amazing... Well, first of all, the way that they find it, he's like, wasn't it obvious that this is the planet?
Yeah, it's like, oh, duh. Look at the clues. And he lists off, like, two things.
Hasselhoff's
because there's no other planet in the world that could have these two traits because there's only a billion planets. And he's like,
I never thought of that.
He's like, well, how could you have noticed that?
And out of a billion planets.
It's so obvious, but so obtuse at the same time.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Yeah, he was
brilliant
writing. almost had some of the qualities that Leia had with the entry little short for a stormtrooper kind of snarkiness a little at times, you know, when they first found him.
I just think the whole thing was so convenient. Like, how are we going to get to the next scene? Oh, I know. Let's have him deliver some exposition.
Yeah.
That was the whole film.
Walk down that hallway was almost like Wizard of Oz-ish.
Yeah.
You know, kind of that walk.
What did you say it was, Sean? Mm. The walk down the hallway? You said it was something different.
Oh, at the beginning, there was some Kubrickian shots. I think that's what we were talking about.
I said it was turned into a Peter Jackson movie.
Okay, I was thinking Wizard of Oz,
right.
Now that you say that, because that was...
Well, speaking of which shots, the actor we were talking about, the Thor, his costume for some reason just looked like, and I know... That movie came out way after, but it almost looked like a He-Man costume. Something you'd have seen He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. What's his name? Beastman or whatever? I can't remember the cartoon, but that's the character. Just the costume, not his green head. That reminded me of Martian Manhunter. Mm. But,
we're in a future space environment, but yet we're still dressed like savages, sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. All the troglodytes.
We didn't even talk about the head with the tentacles.
That right. What was that all about?
That's like the Unimind from the Kree scroll. Captain Marvel, the Unimind, that's in a giant brain in a tank, and it's got tentacles on it.
Did you ever see a movie called Invaders from Mars? The old one, the one from the 50s. I want to say there was something similar looking to this in that movie. Okay.
Now, that trope has been used by several authors long before that. Out of the side of the planet, they have a brain that's
Even in Doctor Who, you've got the face of Bo. It's
In the 30s and 40s, writers were writing about brains kept in aquariums to keep the mind alive.
Yeah, that's made its way.
Famous scientists.
Sort of. Even you mentioned it. I think you called it Zordon at one point.
I did.
Which is totally, it's just like, that's another example of the same thing. Just the floating head in the glass case.
Yeah, that's what I thought of. I was like, oh, Zordon?
Well, even, I don't know if you guys remember the Battle of the Planets, that flamey face that was always, you know, showed up, that was for the evil empire.
That's my the only Wizard of Oz.
You're my age group. You've seen Battle of the Planets.
I keep confusing that for some reason with Last Starfighter. Because all I remember is the guy standing
One's
around.
One's a cartoon, one's a movie.
What? Battle of the Planets is a battle.
Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
So. Battle of the Planets and G-Force. Three movies. Yeah, the kids are all dressed like birds.
No.
Really?
No, where was
I? God, I'm alone on this island.
You
know what else movie we have used?
What?
What happens now?
We die.
Last Starfighter callback. You can hear that on a previous episode.
Have you done that?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to go and watch it. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies.
I do. They did spend quite a bit of money on these sets.
I have no idea.
They had to, right?
The sets.
But that's our.
The sets.
At least it
really had that kind of 70s disco future.
Yeah, the eggshell
kind of Metropolis meets, you know, cocaine look.
And very large. They were very large sets. I mean, even like the caverns and stuff. I mean, they used a lot of hanging miniatures and stuff like that. They were bad. Yeah. They just didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't work. Because, I mean, that's why I like, you know, I like the movies of Mario Bava. He's an Italian filmmaker who pulls this stuff off with a decent amount of success. And then you see, like, Luigi Cozzi do it, and it's like, oh, that's what it looks like when it's bad. It's like all of the shots of the spaceships, you know, are it's obvious that we're looking at miniatures because I think of the lenses that they're using or something. How did Star Wars shoot miniatures and somehow make it seem like a giant ship? And here, when you shoot it, it seems like you put a camera up next to a toy.
Because brainwashed all their audience. They were brainwashed.
First of all, I think what has to do with it. And I don't,
we have the voice of attention being like totally wiped out by fanboys all of a sudden.
Your background and then what you're shooting. Because in this movie, all the stars are right up there with you, which doesn't
help. And Christmas lights.
And they're different colored and everything. If you look at Star Wars, I mean, there's stars and everything, but it's what you would think like the stars would look like. And, you know, everything's way far off in the distance. And
not three planets within crashing distance
of each other. There's nothing right up in your face, and obviously different colored, red, green, and blue stars and planets and everything. I mean, I think that's what gives way to what you were talking about. I think that's the difference between what makes your spaceships look like that. That and the fact that no ship in Star Wars was ever a different... was red or blue or green. I don't think.
And also...
that never happened.
But these things are like base colors.
But these are unpainted. Like, I mean, they're just shining red and blue,
the paint
yellow,
helps.
You know, lights on them.
But I also think the audio work in Star Wars is absolutely incredible in comparison to this.
Definitely the pioneers of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you don't just see a ship, you feel a ship with the low rumbles and the
first
boosts.
Scene when they come in.
You know, it's like that's almost a haunting feeling more so than the visual in some respects.
And the way the ships were shot in this movie, in Star Wars, they moved... in this movie, they move on an X or Y axis, and that's it. Yeah. Star Wars, they moved more than that. I mean, they were going all over the place.
Yeah,
even though they did.
Rolling shots, there's rolling shots. There's tons of that stuff. But in this one, it's, you know, it's coming at you, going away from you.
Yeah.
Going in, going out. That's it.
Even though the plot took us to the fourth dimension. It did take us to the fourth dimension.
That was a great scene. That was great. It's like, I wouldn't be emperor if I didn't have at least one.
Oh, that's right.
Halt the flow of time!
Yeah.
The green rays come out. Didn't you point out, Sean, that they said it was going to be 3 minutes, but they only had 48 seconds?
Well, I think...
They only had 48 seconds before the bomb was going to blow up.
Right, but the way he explains it, it's like, in 3 minutes, everything will slow down. Like, in 3 minutes, it'll happen.
Because that would include the primer and the timer on the bomb, wouldn't it?
But maybe he meant that, like...
You had three minutes from this point.
Like, things are going
to
slow down.
And he took 3 minutes to explain what they needed to do.
What's going on?
Oh, we should probably get going.
This is why I wish there were characters, like, who, when he announces this stuff, would just look at him and go, like, where the fuck were you 5 minutes ago?
Like, the Death Squad. Why didn't you bring them up first?
Yeah, exactly.
Time. What are you doing? Like, get out of here. Unless you're going to help from now on.
Like, Acton, you know the future. Why didn't you tell me that this was going to happen so we could have taken a left instead of a right?
You know, Acton doesn't like breaking the law, obviously.
It's like, Acton, there's nobody around. Like, what are you doing?
Well, when he's alone by himself, he just likes to play with a little squiggly...
He does. Because Acton doesn't give a shit. Acton really doesn't give a shit.
I have to think that the only reason Christopher Plummer did this movie is because... He must have felt like he passed up an opportunity with Star Wars.
He probably did.
And like he should have been Obi-Wan or something. And then the agent didn't give him the phone call. He's like, "Oh, science fiction's dead." And then a year later he's like, next Star Wars script, give it to me.
Right, we got the next best thing.
Yeah.
You're gonna love this.
Yeah, except you have to be Dr. Seuss and Mr. Rogers wrapped in one at the end and creep everybody out.
Well, it's gotta be, I mean, I guess to what you're saying, it's like there's this certain mentality that, you know, the producers have to have towards science fiction, right? That where you look at, like, you know, it's like, well, the science fiction thing's hot. They read the script, they're like, I don't understand Zarth Arn, Acton. Right.
Oh, that must
be good.
But,
I mean, when they read the script for Star Wars,
they must have thought the
same
thing.
With a Darth Vader, right. Like, what the fuck is that? You know, right. Like, whatever, C-3PO, that sounds retarded. Yeah. You assume that they're the same.
Well, there's actually a comic out that is Spielberg. Lucas's original plotting for it, and they have different. Han Solo is actually like a green lizard alien.
I was going to touch on this. I'm not sure without the influence of the actors that were involved in Star Wars and the special effects crew that was involved in Star Wars that Lucas wouldn't have pulled this rather than Star Wars. Because have you seen episodes 1, 2, and 3? The plot isn't that much better than what this is.
No.
It really. I mean, when George Lucas is up to his own devices, it's really crappy.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree.
Well, I know I've seen Red Tail.
So I'm not sure that there isn't some influence there, but also there isn't some dumb luck involved with some actors saying this is ridiculous. We gotta write this ship because I don't want to be in a piece of garbage.
Yeah, well, it shows you like the great leap of faith of like an Alec Guinness or somebody,
or Harrison Ford, or you know, people saying George, I'm not going to say that line.
Graffiti and all. Well, and just the thing is too is you got to think up to this point we were getting movies like Star Crash and a few other 50s sci-fi. Man. So when this came in, this was like groundbreaking.
Star Wars,
like, oh my god, this is what science fiction should be. You know, I remember going on a school trip to go see Star Wars. They took us to the theater to go see Star Wars. And yeah, it was...
Yeah, because your big science fiction movies before that were, I mean, I think Forbidden Planet for, like, the 50s, Planet of the Apes for
the
60s.
Planet of the Apes was my big one.
2001 was, like, here's the hard science, science fiction. You had Star Trek on TV.
Yeah.
And then it went to, like, Westworld.
Which is coming back, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Westworld TV show.
And then Star Wars, I think.
Yeah, and if you watch a lot of that, Star Wars was the one that was like, oh my God, this is it. I mean, I remember being a little kid and seeing Chewbacca and thinking, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I wanted a shirt with Chewbacca on it.
Yeah.
And, he was just this really little character. Yeah. And then, you know, because, I mean, I watched a lot of sci-fi on Saturday mornings, you know, because you'd watch, they'd have Creature Feature the night before, Monster Matinee, then Saturday Sci-Fi Hour, and you'd watch these, you know, different movies. And, and it wasn't that. Yeah.
Those days are off.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think
we
this
had
movie...
horror host. I had the original Jerry G. Bishop was my Sven Gulli. There's nothing wrong with Rich
Cause or whatever. Yeah. He's still around.
Oh yeah, he's a good guy. But I'm just saying, I grew up watching him.
Yeah.
And I miss those old.
Well, I think
I've actually thought about talking to you guys about doing that. About one of us doing a horror host and just writing the stuff and just having fun with it.
See, that'd be fun. That'd be great. I'd be up for that.
But I think this movie, because I actually do think that this was somewhat of a hit here and abroad because
do we have the box office mojo numbers on this?
Does box office mojo go there? Back? I got it.
Yeah. I bet you it does.
I don't know if it goes back that far, but I think it was a decent hit because of the fact that like there was Star Wars and nothing else. Like everybody was taken so out of left field by Star Wars, by surprise, you know? So it was like, we need another science fiction movie. And then it's like the Italians come up with this Star Crash, and they put it in the theaters, and all the kids want to go see it because they just saw Star Wars. So I think there was that. I mean, this is before Alien would have been the right. following year. Yeah. They kind of tweaked it a little bit, and then Star Trek.
I'm trying to think. If Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers were on TV before Star Wars. I can't remember.
No, they were. Inspired by. Okay. By, wait, what did you say?
Battlestar. Buck Rogers Galactica had a Buck legacy before, but I think Battlestar was after.
Yeah, but the Buck Rogers in the 25th century, the one with Gil.
Those were both
yes. because of Star Wars. Okay. They put those on TV. Like,
I couldn't
in
remember
79.
The timing. I mean, you know, some of that I remember.
Yeah, but this beats them. I think this is out before Buck Rogers, before Battlestar Galactica,
so
before Alien,
Star Wars,
before Star Trek.
This is
the
what we're shooting
picture.
For. They'd seen this. This is what we don't want to do. So they found their middle ground, and that's where they went, because they weren't. They were neither this nor were they Star Wars. They were good, but they weren't classic.
Complete tangent. If you haven't seen Battlestar Galactica, the newer version, it is incredible.
Oh, the new stuff?
Yeah, the new, like, it really is. That's four seasons
the only thing
of
I miss
awesome.
Is, I do miss the old Cylon Raiders. I like the old.
Yeah,
Cylon.
I'll take
the
number
ones,
six
the
any
ones
day
look
of the
like
week.
Toasters.
What do they call
them? You've never seen Battlestar Galactica?
No.
Oh my gosh.
What is the show Battlestar Galactica?
It is incredible.
Don't call it sci-fi for now and call it space fantasy. There you go.
Okay. Soap opera
that's
for
how
men.
Who are you in? It's a we're not watching a sci-fi movie. It's space fantasy.
There you go. It's less offensive that way. real quick, also, Luigi Cozzi. Directed a bunch of movies in Italy, but specifically, I think the only thing maybe we were remembering for the Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies.
I saw that when I was like five at the drive-in theater.
So now I know who to blame for that too.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a double feature. I saw the Hercules movie, and I think I saw Superman 2. Oh, maybe, okay. Maybe I don't. It was right around that time. Maybe was it 83, 82?
I think so. No, wait, was it later than that? Maybe somewhere between 83 and 86.
I don't remember exactly.
A lot of cool drive-in movies.
It was a double feature. I think it was Superman 1 or 2 coupled with Hercules. If I remember.
Ruby and Island of the Twilight People. I can't remember. It's kind of a Dr. Moreau type movie. Twilight, I believe.
Was. And the Fishman. Is Barbara Bach in it? I want to see this movie. Island of the Fishman. It's called Screamers.
No, not that one. This is basically like Island of Dr. Moreau. And then Ruby, I just remember some weird scene with a drive-in theater where the film came out and grabbed the person. It was almost like the tree in The Evil Dead, but it was film stock that grabbed it rather than.
Well, Luigi Cozzi also... I mean, he did a couple of Giallo movies. He did a couple of, you know, science fiction, something called Contamination, a Giallo called The Killer Must Kill Again. But now I think he's retired. He runs Dario Argento's Profondo Rosso store in Rome. That's what he does. He manages the store. So you can go meet Luigi Cozzi if you're in Rome and have him autograph your copy of Star Trek.
You get that done.
I can't find what it made, but this movie cost $4 million.
What?
In 1978.
Yes, the budget of this movie is $4 million.
That's like $60 million now.
Yeah, I don't know what that would be now.
Shit.
A lot.
Now, how much did it make?
I can't find it.
Oh, okay. It's probably made that in video.
I do believe that it was a success because it was put out by Roger Corman and probably publicized all to hell. And you had, Caroline Monroe. In a bikini.
I will give you that.
That was cute.
Costume later made famous by Sean Connery when he wore it in.
Oh, please don't bring that up.
Zardoz.
Yeah.
Indeed. One thing I do want to give this a little bit of props. I do think the music was kind of groovy.
By John Barry, the guy.
Yeah.
Who
Oscar. It was like ridiculously
John Barry.
Yeah. Disco space. And I don't know. I kind of dug the music.
Yeah. It was spacey.
There you go. Boom. Is that all we have to say about Star Crash?
Oh, that's not all.
before wrap-ups? Because there's a guy over here who's been itching to get in. Igor, why don't you come over here and say hello?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right. You've said hello. Now you can get the hell out of here. Thanks,
bye, Igor.
He gave me an envelope. The envelope has a little bit of slime on it, so you got to get through that. All right, so this is mailbag. We've got a comment from Jillian Whitney on Facebook. You can comment.
Hi, Jillian.
On Facebook at facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. She said about our Strange Brew episode that it's one of her favorite movies, and she loves our show.
Well, Jillian, right. Awesome. Yeah. And yes, Strange Brew is a fantastic movie.
And we love you.
And thanks for
listening. We do love you.
Okay, so Star Crash wrap-ups, that goes to Sean is up first. Sean, what did you think of Star Crash?
It's one of the best bad movies. This is fantastic. I found it enjoyable. The characters, just the decisions they decided to make for this movie, giving the robot, like we said, the Jerry Reed cowboy personality, it's fantastic. It's funny. Line delivery by these actors, I mean, especially Hasselhoff, it's great. I think it's, fantastic. I think you should watch it right now. It's not going to win any awards. I tell you that. But this is
maybe it does.
I hope.
How many has he had?
Am I coming across as sarcastic? Like this it's fun to watch in all its just it's in the title Crash.
Yes.
Like this is a car crash of a movie.
It is an aptly named
but
movie.
It is wonderfully you can't. But what do people do when
they're
there's a car crash?
Into the stars.
People just drive
they
by slowly and can't look away. And that's this movie is that you can't look away and it's great to watch. It's like I said, you know, it's not an example of great filmmaking, but it is fun to watch. This movie, and I recommend it. I think you have to see this movie.
I
think you have to see it.
Whoa.
I really do. I think you have to see
this movie. I mean, there's like Oscar-winning movies, and then there's Star Crash.
You have to see this movie.
No, there is all other movies, then there's Star Crash.
What? You will have a good time watching this movie. You will have a great time watching this movie. Maybe not by yourself. But get with friends and drink and watch this movie because it's fun. I like it. I would watch it again.
He's already seen it twice.
I've seen it twice. And I would watch it again. That would probably be the last time I watch it, but I will watch it again.
He says that now.
So he's committed now.
I recommend.
Oh, my cheeks hurt.
You.
Man, I don't think I'm in the minority here. I thought this was garbage. I kept watching this thinking...
It is! But it's wonderful garbage!
It's like garbage that doesn't stink.
It's garbage with a monster in it that wants to kill you and the walls are closing
in.
It's
garbage with bubbles in it that want to kill you. Let's keep it
straight. I kept hoping it would be like... So bad it was funny, but this is just bad.
Did you laugh out loud? Well,
there was about three.
I sat next to him. He laughed.
You
a
laughed
lot.
Out loud.
I did. You're in right. The, I did
even,
laugh.
Even in absurdity,
I did. I did laugh a couple of times because of the absurdity, because it was ridiculous. But there were also times when I'm like, "Is this over? Please no, let it end." I really thought
there was a lull. Like when he's trying to bring her back from the frost, I'm just like,
I really thought it was going to end when they destroyed the computers.
The scene was almost over.
When they destroyed the computers.
Yes, I did too.
I was at the end of the movie. Good, we're done. You know, I was hoping it would be over,
but
because it wasn't, I'm like, oh my god.
It's a monologue at the end of this movie that makes it all worth it.
No, it makes me asleep for about a week.
We don't need soliloquies in science fiction.
Christopher Plummer came in, said whatever he wanted to say, and then they wrote the rest of the movie around it.
That's exactly what happened.
And that's why it's glorious.
There are some laugh out loud moments in spite of itself. There are some ridiculous lines that are porn worthy, really.
Yes.
But oh my gosh, it's so bad. It's just there's so much bad going on. And I think this is one of those examples. I mean, you've got like nowadays things like Pompeii. And Eobo movies that really try to like up the action for no particular plot reason. I think that's what this is. I think that they're let's get another action scene in. Let's get another booby scene in. Let's get another, you know, another turncoat scene in just because they don't really know how to make a film. They just want to make it stimulating. I think that's what this is. A grade A, like, oh, my gosh, we don't know what to do. So let's stimulate. And that bothers me. But it is ridiculous because it's just one thing after another is just awful. And this is the concept is so ridiculous. It's almost this is almost sacrilegious, but follow me for just a moment. It reminds me of an interesting idea gone horribly wrong. I think of this and I think of Big Trouble in Little China. No.
He said go.
Okay.
With him.
No. just follow me for a second. I love Big Drum, Little China, but that could be an awful movie.
Oh yeah.
If you in the wrong hands,
will be.
Yeah, in the wrong hands, without John Carpenter, without Kurt Russell, that would be awful.
Right, well, and that's the difference between Star Wars and StarCraft.
And I'm thinking, that's what this might be. It's like without a crafted filmmaker and a crafted team, we just throw everything in the kitchen sink together and kind of hope. And I think that's one of the reasons why something like Star Wars and Big Trouble Little China work. And why this is a disaster.
And this turns into poo stew.
It's really bad. It's just bad.
Okay. So disclaimer. I'm going to say.
Disclaimer or disclaimer?
Disclaimer.
Okay.
Disclaimer? Disclaimer?
Yes. Point break?
Just put your emphasis wherever you want.
Point break?
We don't care.
Did I put the wrong emphasis?
It's your wrap up. You enunciate it the way you want.
Okay. Disclaimer. I would not watch this movie by yourself. One. Two, probably wouldn't watch it ever. Three, if you came across your path, make sure you're with a group of people and you have a lot of booze or, recreational drugs if that's your thing.
So you agree with me with everything I said?
No. Because I will not watch this movie again. I can't say I won't, but I don't plan on it.
Nobody plans on.
You mean if you were trapped under a bus and it was playing in the bus you were trapped in?
Well, I'm gonna die anyway. Let's watch StarCraft.
Well, I mean, it was funny, and that's because of the group of company I'm with. I mean, they're like Chris said, the dialogue is there's so many sexual innuendos that I mean, how can they not realize it? Like, it's ridiculous.
English wasn't
no
the first
pun intended. No, it's ridiculous.
Oh, we must eject. Oh, let me come with you.
Yes, I mean, I lost it.
Yep.
I was laughing for a good 5 minutes.
She's British, so she knows. Come on.
Oh my god.
These guys wrote it in Italian, and some guy translated it into English. They didn't. I don't think they knew.
That was the one guy that said, "Go, no, trust me. It makes sense.
Yeah. It's like, come with me. You come over here. Yeah.
And then you've got Stella going, I get you. I get you. Let's just run the scene.
And then it's the delivery then. Then that's the actor's fault. Which, by the way, is not good. The acting is awful. it's god awful. First.
You didn't like those extreme close-ups
into this film, I was like, what have I done?
No, what has Colin done?
Colin, why?
Let's give the blame where it goes.
Okay. But short and sweet, this movie, I mean, though I was entertained tonight, I think that's solely based on the group of people I was with. I do not think it was because of the movie at all. But, I would not recommend this movie. I don't plan on watching it again. It may happen. Peer pressure happens. But I don't see it happening in the near future. So, that's a pass on me. Oh. Sorry, Colin. Sorry.
Well, much like one of my favorite actors, Kurt Russell, in the movie Tango and Cash in the courtroom scene, I want to say something nice and noble and honorable about this movie. But I can't, because it just fucking sucks. I can't say anything good about from the porn acting. I think actually porn acting is better at times than the acting in this movie. And trust me, I've seen plenty of 70s porn. The acting's a lot better.
The pros are not.
They tried to at least put a story together. This jumped all over the place. I do think it had elements that were cool. And some of the effects I did like. The giant plastic brain with the marker on it was one of the best.
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we forgot about the giant plastic brain.
1978.
So much.
And then there were some pieces.
So much you can't even cover it all. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
So,
the starship that was a claw.
It was comical. It's definitely one of those movies that, much like she had just said, if you get together with the right group of people, have a couple of beers, you can have fun with it. Don't go in thinking you're going to get a great entertainment, but it's something to check out if you want to have fun. It's one of those. It's almost like a Mystery Science Theater.
Exactly.
That's
when you hang out with your friends.
Yes. Yeah, because if I tried to watch this at home, I would have been asleep 10 minutes into it.
Probably.
Yes. Yeah. But sitting around with all the guys and Jenny tonight, it's fun because we're all bouncing the innuendos like they do on that show. And that's what I'm saying. If you do something like that, then it's fine. I mean, as a solo science fiction, gotta see it. you could probably pass on that. I would pass on that. It's not one of my favorites, but it did have, well, no, it didn't have any redeeming qualities. Damn it. I tried to find one. Except, no, all right, here's my one. L is the yeah, come on. He is the,
has the goddess Caroline Monroe in the bikini.
Okay. That's the redeeming quote. Thank you. Now you pulled it out for me. The Vampirella costume.
don't pull it out for him.
Walter Brennan as a robot, probably not working in a sci-fi movie. That's all I'm saying.
Walter Brennan.
So I would pass.
Ranch should be angry.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, there's only so many times. There's...
Walter Brennan.
I'm totally in agreement, I think, with Sean on this. I mean, like... I appreciate the movie not as a great science fiction movie, but you watch, I mean, I watch a lot of movies. I see a lot of bad movies. Every once in a while, there comes around a bad movie that is just so gloriously bad that it becomes, I think this movie's hilarious. I think it's like one of the greatest comedies. And this is the thing, I don't like comedies all that well, but I like these type of movies. I'm like liking the fact that this filmmaker like failed so hard trying to do something.
No, it's clearly they tried so hard.
Yeah, I think that's it.
To make a great
because
movie.
It feels like, you know, because, you know, as Chris was talking, he's like, you know, at some point they're just trying to do like a Sensorama kind of thing. And I'm like, this is what I think of Michael Bay's movies. This is what I think of like the Transformers things where we're just trying to push the sensory button. But
true.
Somehow
very true.
They're very, they feel very cynical and just, you know, ugly. Where it's like, if you look at Star Crash, there's like this kind of like, youthful exuberance,
optimism,
and something. It's like we just don't know how bad we are. We think we're doing something good. Yes, so, it's probably for the same commercial reasons, right?
It was excitement.
You're saying this would fall into that category. If we were young filmmakers and made this, we would be proud of it.
Maybe when you were 13,
excited, going like we're making a movie,
right?
That's the excitement in this movie.
Yeah,
the same team that makes Transformers are like.
Yeah, we're making another movie.
Hold up. But a lot of these people are also involved in the Bond franchise. Well, and
not the makers.
Not the makers, but I mean, you've that same mentality of, let's see how ridiculous we can make this particular movie. Let's see how. Because that franchise at that time went way over the top.
I remember certain people, unnamed, but that have made movies, and it's like, you can feel that. They're like, oh, we're doing this. This is cool. But
you know,
then
Collins
they
right
don't.
Here,
but okay. They don't go at the end. Go, holy shit! We didn't really make a movie. This sucks.
Well, I mean, you know, when you hear these guys talking about it, I mean, like, do they know what they made? I think, like, in Italy, the fact that it was an Italian-made Star Wars cash-in, I think, like, the Italians were like, "We made this. This came from Italy." You know, it's like this. It's got major stars
it's
in it.
It's a masterpiece.
It's
a
there's so much Italian pride in this movie.
The Sistine Chapel. That's true.
Oh, my God.
So we can't. Okay, so I'm taking that back. I'm not giving him any points because it was, the Italians liked their own movie or whatever.
Sure.
The little group of guys trying to do something, make, a little engine that could. I like this movie because it makes me laugh. I like the fact that, like, you know, when you watch a lot of bad movies, which you have to, I guess you're kind of like you're tin panning for gold when you watch, especially horror, science fiction, and fantasy films.
But it makes you appreciate the good ones.
You watch a lot of stuff and you're frequently bored. You know, like you're sitting there, you're just like, oh, God, Jesus, when's this going to, like, I get it. We're doing the same thing for, like, 70 minutes or 90 minutes.
That's what I did about a half hour into it.
All right, but I'm saying my experience was completely different than that. And you, listener, know if this is you by just watching the trailer.
Yeah.
You know if this is on your vibe or not. But the fact that, like, something new happens, like, every 10 minutes in this movie. It's like, and here's a brain.
It's a totally
here's
different
a ship that turns into a ship.
Oh, she's on
it's
land.
A shooting gallery.
She jumps out of window.
The ship explodes. She must have landed.
Now we're going to stop time. It is like, are they just making this thing up as they go along? It has that kind of you know, right? Close enough.
Christopher Plummer walked on set, said that halting the time thing, and everyone went, whoa.
Oh, fuck, what are we going to do now?
I'm not coming back to reshoot. Screw you. You figure it out.
I think the night.
All right, we got to change the whole past
scene. There goes our third act. Damn it. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would.
That would make more sense than what the writers did if they actually wrote it that way. If they wrote it the way it is.
Just like as they went, they were going through it. They went, oh, yeah, they probably did. Who knows? I don't care. I'm saying that the effect.
We saw this is a
fucking classic of the good, bad.
Well, you have to say that. You have to justify buying it.
Well, but I'm saying I buy it because I like it. I actually like this as a bad movie. I have a couple others in there. They may be showing up sooner. Well, okay, I'd say
can
even like we watched a movie
advance?
Called The Beyond a little while ago. Yeah. You've seen The Beyond. But The Beyond is by no means a good movie. You know, there's people who tell you that it is, like it's a classic, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that movie is not good. Yeah. But that movie is entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
They make sure that you are entertained the entire length of that movie. This movie is entertaining from wall to fucking wall.
But
are we trying to real?
I'm still laughing right now.
Real
mystery science.
Real
MST3K.
But can you distinguish that entertainment? It's entertaining.
But here's the thing. There's a difference between, you know, metacognitively making a film, knowing your parody, knowing we're intentionally making this bad, versus saying, okay, they made a bad movie, let's laugh at them.
Yes.
You know, that's like Dolomite. Oh, yeah. Versus Black Dynamite.
Dolomite
is awful.
It's better.
Black Dynamite, amazing. Black Dynamite is awesome. Okay,
and Dolomite is awesome.
Didn't you also pick Dolomite?
Dolomite is amazing.
I think I did. Somebody, was it you or me?
Brent brought what?
Dolomite.
Brent brought Dolomite.
Dolomite.
Brent, where did Brent get Dolomite?
Yeah.
He's the one who picked Dolomite.
Dolomite was kind of awesome.
That was amazing.
Brent found that in his new house.
Because he rhymes the whole way through. It's fantastic.
It's ridiculous. It is awful. But Black Dynamite is hilarious.
Yeah.
But you almost have to watch Dolomite in order to appreciate Black Dynamite.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think you have to watch Star Crash to appreciate Star Wars.
Or vice versa.
Okay, I'm going to take all that. I was saying that because I got carried away in the moment.
Right.
But, carried away?
All right, we got to wrap this
maybe
up.
Maybe I'll consider watching Star Wars.
I'm saying Star Crash is a goddamn... diamond of trash cinema.
Yes.
Trash cinema. There you go.
That's a high five.
A diamond in the rough.
If you know who you are, you want to check this thing out.
All four of you.
That's right. So next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show, Jenny is going to pick the movie, and she's picking...
I am picking the action classic.
Oh, Jesus.
Nicolas Cage's...
Wait, pause. No, go ahead.
Nicolas Cage's best performance of all time. By far.
The Wicker Man?
He was
Leaving
Las Vegas?
Con Air.
Bunny.
Con Air, people. We're watching Con Air.
Valley Girl?
All right.
Why couldn't you just put the bunny back in the box?
That's right.
So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And as usual, if you want to get a hold of us, facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. You can find all of our past episodes on SaturdayNightFreakShow.blogspot.com or on iTunes. For some reason, they only show like the first 50 or the last 50 now.
Yeah.
But if you subscribe, you get like all 100 and whatever many we've done.
You don't know what you missed.
3 years worth of podcasts, Stitcher and TuneIn and everywhere else. Just Google us. You'll find us. We're taking over your world. And until next week, then, the basement is going dark.